Hi. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 5th, 1996. In the fireside room this morning, our speaker is Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. Today he will be beginning his series entitled, Is the Religious Right Wrong About Family Values? Today's session number is 5 and is titled, Why Are Children and Families in Crisis? Let's listen in.
My name is Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. Welcome to this first in a series of conversations about families and children and families in crisis and what that implies for those of us who care about children, but also for those of us who are concerned about political, social, economic priorities of the country. The session is entitled, Is the Religious Right Wrong About Family Values? And I'll talk a little bit more about that at the very, very end. I'd like to do just a couple of things, and then I want to begin involving you in a conversation. First, I'll introduce you to my children. I approach this topic as someone who's a very concerned and active parent. I have three young children. They are Hannah, who is now 8. You'll see her wandering around the village. And Audrey, who is 6, and Naomi, who's almost 4, going on about 40, I think. We call Naomi our compassionate bowling ball. She's very compassionate, but she always rolls her way in the middle of anything that's going on. You'll probably catch sight of her later on as well. Second kind of introductory statement would be just to tell you, I think that those of us who work with children, those of us who are parents, that parenting is one of the most humbling and at times humiliating undertakings. And so it's something that, you know, I'll be talking somewhere along the way during these 5 sessions. We'll be looking at some things that we might do as parents, and certainly my preoccupation, or one of my preoccupations as a parent is, how do you raise compassionate, caring, loving, safe children in a country and world that's fracturing? So that's one of the questions that we'll be addressing. But anyone, from my vantage point, anyone who dares say much, give much advice about parenting is probably delusional. So it's really a very, very humbling and incredibly important task, however. There's a couple of chairs here yet. And the third thing that I'd like to clarify, that although I've given this session the provocative title, Is the Religious Right Wrong About Family Values? And I think that's a very important question, and we will be addressing it in a variety of different ways. The real issue that I hope to pose, or the real question that I hope to pose, is what, in fact, would we do differently as parents and as a society if we actually care about children? And my personal belief and bias, which will be reflected throughout these sessions, is that there is, in fact, a profound crisis within our society, and that crisis, that families are not immune to that crisis, and that if we are to respond to the real needs of families and children, it will require significant changes in our personal decisions and priorities that are within our sphere of influence as families, but it will also require major, major, major changes in how we set about organizing our social priorities. So that's kind of the frame of reference. And in the bookstore, you'll find a book. I literally got sent here about a few days before I arrived from the printer that I wrote. It's called Families Valued, Parenting and Politics for the Good of All Children. And if you're interested in these issues, you might be interested in picking up on that book. And also, if some of you actually find any time here, there's so many things to do that you would actually read into the book along the way. It's partly what I'll be drawing on throughout the week. So it'd be kind of fun. If some of you were doing that, we would have a lot of food for thought that we could share together. Well, I want to start out with a story. I actually told the story. A few of you may have been here last week. We had a forum talking about issues of families. And I told this story. It's a very brief story, so it won't take too long. But when I was writing this book, our then almost three-year-old, Naomi, she got into this very bad pattern for a couple of weeks of waking up in the middle of the night. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning every morning for a couple of weeks. And she would scream almost at the top of her lungs, "Dad!" Or occasionally "Mom," but it seemed to me in my sleeplessness that it was usually "Dad!" And there needed to be no translation. It just simply meant, "Get your butt in here now." And so I would drag my... I don't do well with sleep deprivation. Fortunately, Sarah does a little better than I do. But anyway, I'd stagger out of bed and go over, and didn't seem to be anything particularly wrong. I don't know if she just enjoyed our company at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. But it was getting very frustrating. And so walking her to bed, as this has been happening for a couple weeks, walking up the stairs to the room that she shares with her sisters, I said, "Naomi, you know, moms, and we love you so much, but moms and dads really need good sleep. And uninterrupted sleep is the best kind of sleep at all." And she looks at me and just very directly, this not even quite 3 years old, she looks at me and says, "Dad, my dreams are full of troubles." Now, I don't know where that came from. And she's not someone who's had night terrors, but she in some ways was articulating very much what I have been writing about, what prompted me to write. And what has prompted me to write and was prompted me to try to take parenting really, really seriously, but parenting in the context of striving to create a family, a neighborhood, and a broader society in which children can thrive, is that I really do believe that our dreams are full of troubles. When we look at the future through the lens of our children, it can be pretty sobering. And when we look at the present through the lens of what's happening to many children in our culture, it can be troubling. So I would like you just to turn to one other person, and if you're within reach so you can turn around so you're talking to someone you don't know rather than someone you're married to or that you know well, so you can get a little different interaction. I would just like you very quickly, in 2 or 3 minutes, to think about the future and think about where are some of your concerns. What are some of the issues, some of the things that concern you as you look at the world, as you look at the future and the place of children? Why are you here, in a sense? It might be another way of asking. I'm sure that some of you have some pretty real preoccupations about what's going on with families and children. So our dreams are full of troubles. So try to put some substance to that in your own concern about children and families as you look to the future. Just for a couple minutes. That one approach I could have taken to this class would have just been to stop here and then come back on Friday. Because it's a very big topic, and it's one that obviously all of us have strong feelings about. So let's try briefly just to report back some of the issues that you named. What are some of the concerns that you have as you look towards the present in terms of the future of family, children?
Kids, yeah. Growing up being afraid of everything.
Okay. Fear. Growing up afraid. Okay, what else?
Lack of family time.
What's that?
Lack of family time.
Okay, lack of family time.
Livelihood.
Okay, how to make a living, huh? Ends meet. Yeah.
A sense of values and respect for each other.
Okay. Value and respect for each other. And you feel like that's just not happening the way that it used to?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. I'll teach school for you.
Okay.
Yeah. How do we determine or arrive at we might want to accept what the set of values are.
So kind of a, how do we come up with like a minimal set of values, huh? Okay. What else? Yeah.
Instability.
Instability. Say a little bit more in the family structure. Okay.
Kids worried that their parents may divorce or fighting going on.
Okay.
They don't know what the future holds for them as a family.
And it's a lot of insecurity that comes there. Yeah.
Faith development in our secular society.
I'm sorry.
Faith development in our secular society.
Okay, so how to develop faith and have that be a basis in a society that's very secular. Someone over here.
Too much permissiveness.
Okay. So, permissiveness. Yeah, way up on top.
I think school substituting for a parent role. Why this marker is bad? Yeah, throw that one down. This isn't much better.
Okay, what else?
Or,
yeah.
Christian role modeling, particularly in the home.
Okay, so the need for Christian role modeling. What else?
Violence.
Violence, yeah. Pervasive, isn't it?
Materialism.
TV and movie transmitting around values.
TV, movies, the kind of values. And what was yours?
Materialism.
Okay. Materialism. Okay. What else? Yeah.
At the political level, cuts in social programs.
Okay, the social cutbacks and the impact of that
in
has.
In favor of what do you call it? You call it industry or business, yeah.
Okay. And in favor of business priorities. Okay. What else?
Lack of having a big picture.
Okay, say more. You're talking about our own worldview, our own approach to these issues, or are you, what are you?
Both levels. Well, let me think about it so I formulate it better.
I might be thinking what she's thinking, but I think a short-sightedness of our actions and lack of responsibility, all they see is, I teach junior high and all they see is right here, they never see consequences or anything that happens beyond.
Okay, so short-sighted actions, and you're referring to that in relation to, you see, kind of living, the way that kids do things for now and don't really see a future, so they're doing things for now. Is that now? I would just put a little ditto under there and say, well, I'll put for kids here and put adults here. Okay.
Vast inequalities in education.
Okay. Vast inequalities. Colon in education.
Okay.
Could probably say some other kinds of inequalities too.
Drug and alcohol abuse.
Okay, drug and alcohol abuse. Hey. What else? Go ahead.
Lack of personal responsibility.
Okay. Okay.
Hunger and malnutrition.
Okay, hunger and malnutrition. Growing problem in this country. Anything else? That's a pretty good list, and we can keep adding to it. And I think what's helpful to see in this list, and we'll, did you want to add something?
Oh,
necessity of both parents having to work.
Okay, what's happening in the whole workplace, or jobs and workplace? Okay. I think what's helpful about this list is we'll be kind of wrestling with this throughout, including this morning. Later on, I'll give you an exercise to help us with this. But we have a pretty good list here that involves, again, a lot of us are concerned about some things that are within somewhat our personal control, but impacted by larger forces. And some of us have named things we're very concerned about, the social context in which children and families are struggling to live. And I think those two things, looking at those dimensions and their relationship to each other, is what really needs to happen. That's why I don't know if that's what you were getting at when you say our absence of a broader picture. I feel like there's a huge absence of a broader picture, generally speaking, in this society when we talk about family values and when we talk about families in crisis. But it's very important that we look at how our individual decisions matter, what frames the likelihood of us being able to make good ones, what gets in the way of us making good ones, but also looking at the broader social context in which we live. Okay, here's another quick story, and then I'm going to have you talk to each other again. This is a story, again, you'll find it in, I think, the preface or introduction here. This was with my daughter Audrey, and she was 3 at the time. And she was really excited. We live in an urban center. We live in Minneapolis. We live in a neighborhood right in the city. There's a local school that in the summer had an after-school program that my oldest daughter, Hannah, was at. And Audrey was getting ready to go on the longest bicycle or tricycle journey of her life. And she was really thrilled. It was a block and a half trip down straight, well-paved sidewalks. And we made that trip, and she was really excited. We got to the school. And we get to the school, and Naomi was along, too, in her stroller. And Audrey gets this look of concern on her face as we arrive at the school. And she says, "Dad, don't you think we'd better take the tricycle inside?" And I said, "No, don't worry about it. We're just going to go in. We're going to pick up Hannah. It's going to take us 2 minutes. We'll be on our way." She kind of hesitates a little bit. She says, and then she says again, "Dad, don't you think we better take it inside? Somebody might steal it." Well, I said, no, it'll be fine. So we go inside, and we get Hannah. It takes 2 minutes. We walk out. Her tricycle's gone. We looked down the street, and we see a neighbor holding the remnants of Audrey's tricycle. She chased 3 boys away. 3 young boys came, took her tricycle, and took turns smashing it into the cement. And we go over to her ruined tricycle, and holding a piece of it in her hand, Audrey looks up at me and says, "Dad, why would anybody do this?" So what I want you to do in your small groups is, how would you have answered Audrey? What would you say to her? How do you explain to Audrey why somebody would do this? Okay? So I'll give you a couple minutes. Again, it's really hard for me to interrupt you, so. Again, hopefully we'll have lots of time informally with each other to continue conversations that will flow out of this week.
At least. Is it Friday yet?
Not quite. Okay, well, let's just see what people came up with. How would you answer Audrey? Yeah?
They just don't care.
They just don't care. Okay, what else? Yeah?
There's most kids are good kids, but there's a few bad kids, and it's not right what they did.
Okay.
And I'm sorry this happened.
So most kids are good kids, but there are some bad kids, and I'm really, really sorry that this happened. They shouldn't have done this. And good. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, ask the child how they really felt about it, what their feelings are, and would you ever think to do something like this because of think something like that, I guess, a little child is not to gain anything for himself. It's just
to struggle. So to ask Audrey in this case then how she feels. Yeah, what else?
I think I first would apologize.
Good. That was one of my first responses. It was a very good relearning experience, actually, that we really need to take what children are saying to us seriously. And I think that's one example of thousands of ways in which children communicate to us in which we don't hear. And hers was a pretty direct communication. You can't get much more direct than that. There's a lot of indirect things. Let me see if there's some others first, and then I'll come back. Yeah.
I would have probably said, well, maybe these children see a lot of violence in their homes.
Okay.
And when they are frustrated, that is how they act out.
So maybe these children have seen a lot of violence in their homes, and so when they're frustrated, this is how they would act something like this out. Yeah, what else? Yeah.
They're angry.
Okay, this was an act of angry children. Yeah.
I think along both of those lines, just trying to show them that not everybody might live the same kind of life that our children do or my children do.
But I've been taught the same thing.
That, you know, they might have more frustration, they might live life with more violence or poverty or...
So trying to give her a frame of reference to understand that her experience of 3 years is really valid and important, but it's not the experience of all children. Okay? Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, but she's only three. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's what I thought about a lot of things, that she was only three. And this was a really humbling lesson for me. Let me give you just a very quick story. I think it's pretty hilarious. This was about the same time. Audrey is our, again, you'll see her around. Audrey is always thinking, and she's always making connections, and she has a theory about how everything works. So you can, you know, if you see how a butterfly flies or something, she'll be figuring out, well, I wonder how those wings work. Anyway, I was sitting one day and I was drinking a little soda, and I don't try to drink too much of it, and I don't like my small kids to have a lot of it. And she comes in and sees me, and so she holds out her cup and I pour a little in there, and she says, Dad, is that a lot? And I said, yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. Well, she kind of looks at it, and then she sees this pitcher of apple juice on the table, and it's full, and she says, is that a lot? Not thinking that a three-year-old was going to entrap me, I said, yeah, that's a lot. Then how can you say this is a lot? So that's obvious. So anyway, I'm just trying to say that even three-year-olds and the things that we're able to talk, well, later on we'll talk about this. I mean, I've had tremendous, not only conversations, but conversations rooted in things that we do with my 5 and 6-year-olds about why we don't go to the Mall of America and about the environmental summit that was happening in Brazil at the same time the Mall of America, if you don't know what that is, it's the hugest mall in the country that's opened right outside of Minneapolis. So I'm amazed. I mean, this was a very important lesson for me. I'm amazed at, I mean, you can't use huge words and you have to be a little bit careful how you talk, but I'm amazed at how much even 3-year-olds can understand. What else? What else would you say to Audrey? Yeah.
You know, even though it's not necessarily age appropriate, there's a part of me that wants to say, sadly, we're all by nature sinful and unclean. And there's a part of me that's crazy and breaks tracks too. And I don't want to name that too publicly or disappoint her too much, but you know,
the way in which you want her to understand that in a way it's kind of part of the human condition. I mean, that these kinds of things happen, and it's not totally divorced from who you are and who we are. Okay. What else?
So I guess on that, you could give a lesson on forgiveness, and she'd certainly be old enough for that.
Good. Good. I'll come back to that in a minute. Yeah.
You know, her question was just why, just a one-word question. And so what we came up with up here was the most honest thing to say to her is, we don't exactly know why. I don't know why. And it's the beginning of, but it could be that. Because I think at young children, they take things a little pretty literally. And to give them idea that there is violence in the home that may or may not be true. Maybe they're just bored and hanging out. They have nobody, one ringleader, who knows. But how much can you tell them? I don't exactly know why. It was wrong, it hurts us, and they're probably unhappy, a little angry right now. But so giving them a reference of probably, and mommy doesn't know everything, why.
Which is why I didn't listen to her in the first place, right? Good illustration of that right there. Anybody else? Yeah.
I tend to try to make it clear that some kids really don't know the difference between right and wrong, and even some of the ones that do know it's wrong think that they won't get caught. Uh-huh. And that's the way the world is.
Anybody else?
We thought maybe to offer a little encouragement too, and say that some kids just don't think about what they're doing, and they just do it spontaneously. But to say that had they thought maybe about what the result was going to be, that a little girl's prized possession would be taken from her, that maybe they would have not done.
Okay. Well. I said a couple of things to Audrey. The first one you've already hit on, which was that I was really sorry that I didn't listen to her concern better. And then I also said to her that it was okay for her to be really sad and frustrated that her tricycle was broken. So I tried to acknowledge her feelings. And then I said, Audrey, I really do feel sad for you, but I also feel really sad for the kids who did this. I said, because, we don't know why they did it, but I said, I don't think someone who did this could feel very loved. And then you talked about forgiveness. In our prayers that night, we kind of prayed for the children that destroyed Audrey's tricycle, as well as, again, trying to acknowledge what had happened. And as I talk about in this book, really the resiliency of children is pretty amazing to me, because this episode was really much more difficult for me, at least I think, than it turned out to be for Audrey. Audrey was able to move on faster than I was. And really, the last couple of years and the writing of this book has been my effort to answer Audrey. Because I think to really answer her, I would need to talk to her about all the things that you've talked about. I would have needed to find language to talk about Reaganomics to a three-year-old. I would have needed language to talk about whole lots of dimensions to really get, I think, a full answer to the question of why something like this might happen. Okay. Well, thank you for that, and I appreciate all of your sympathy. The next thing I want to do is I want to ask you, and I won't physically make you do this, because it's kind of an awkward room, but I want you to think about this room as a continuum, with point A being over here, and point B being over here against that wall. I'll put it up here, A in this direction, B over here. This one's not working very well either. And the point of a continuum is that it presents a problem with two very different understandings of what's going on. Two almost polar opposite understandings of what's going on. And yet, you would think in that situation it might be very easy to place yourself. And yet I always find, at least in a continuum like the one I'm going to present to you, I have a place where I would stand, but I have sympathy for the place I'm not going to stand. We'll just see if this works for you. And I think I'll just read it. I'll read it over a couple times. And I want you to think about where you would stand on a continuum in relation to these propositions, which, by the way, are the two that I think are most evident in whatever political and other kind of debate is going on in our country right now about family values and what's going on with families. I'll just tell you, I get kind of nauseated by how often family values, family gets mentioned by both of the main political parties, when I don't feel that either one of them has much of a response to the crisis that I'm familiar with being a parent and as I look at what's going on with families and children. But this is how I think the political debate is framed. So here's A. The breakdown of the family is the principal cause of many key social problems, such as crime, poverty, and teen pregnancy. Okay, I'll read it again. Point A on the continuum. The breakdown of the family is the principal cause of many key social problems, such as crime, poverty, and teen pregnancy. Okay? Over here, B. Poverty is the principal cause of family stress and breakdown. Poverty is the principal cause of family stress and breakdown. Family breakdown. Okay, I'll do it one more time. The breakdown of the family is the principal cause of many key social problems such as crime, poverty, and teen pregnancy. Over here, poverty is the principal cause of family stress and breakdown. Now, what I'd like you to do, again, is get together with one or two other people, a couple of other people, and I want you to talk about where you would place yourself on this continuum. At A, at B, right in the center, closer to A, closer to B, and why? Okay? I'm going to give you almost 10 minutes for this one, okay? See what can come up. Again, I apologize for breaking up your lively discussion. As a recovering introvert, I'd much rather have you in small groups. We need to move on. Are there a couple of people who would be willing to share where you placed yourselves? And why? Yeah, here's one.
I placed myself on the right end over there using a definition.
Over here, the B?
B, using a definition of poverty is an absence of a sense of well-being in my life.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm willing to use that as an explanation for what my quests are.
And as the absence of well-being, would that refer, are you trying to say that poverty is very comprehensive? It is both economic, spiritual,
economic, whatever.
So you're not diminishing the economic, but you're rounding it out and saying your understanding of, okay, thank you. All right, somebody else? So that was over here by B, which the continuum said poverty is the principal cause of family stress and breakdown. So anybody else? Yeah.
If you restrict it to economic poverty, I see these as both being facets of a bit larger problem. And I have to encompass both of these. Because in some cases, there are some very strong families that have demonstrated what we would call a breakdown. The mafia, for instance. Family values to a very large degree, with drugs, prostitution, murder, extortion, numbers, everything. And on the other case, someone was describing, and everyone can think of, it doesn't matter how much money you have in your household, you can still see families breaking down, with or without money. Or families without it that prosper.
Thank you for both of those comments, and I'll ask you to see if there's a couple of more. I think one of the most telling features of how deep the crisis really is the fact that families across all socioeconomic areas of life are have problems. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, we'll go back later on and we'll look at how poverty is a huge, huge factor. But the fact that troubled families aren't just rooted in impoverished families says something about the broader society and our own roles and choices that are that's very important. Okay, a couple more. Yeah,
Mark. I think all three of us felt the same way, and grateful for the first comment. I think if there had been a more nuanced understanding of poverty, such as the first person suggested, we'd have been more toward B. But we observed right away that if poverty was narrowly economically understood, there were lots of nations on the globe who had much more stable family structures, but who were much poorer overall, and had even a lower class that was much poorer, but still more stable. So, but with the new definition of poverty, I think we'd be more toward B. I think another reason we were more toward A, because we didn't have that nuanced definition of poverty, was that we felt that, as far as we understood it, the breakdown of the family, if that's understood, say the divorce rate, one index of that, that sort of starts up much more related to cultural than economic situations in this country from about 1960 on. A lot of the divorce rate rises during a time of relative economic abundance across all classes. So we felt that the roots of family breakdown were often just as much cultural as they were economic. Okay.
Good, thank you. Anybody else? Maybe. Yeah.
We took the easy way out. We took both ends of the line and
drew a circle.
A becomes B, and I really can't add much more in the first element about what the definition of poverty is. So I think.
Thank you for that. That's a great lead in.
You're making circular motions with your hands.
Did you notice? There you go. Unconscious body language.
Yeah, you were standing there going like this, and I'm going.
Well, we're almost out of time here, so let me take that as a good lead into what I, those of you who are going to come back, what I'd like you to think about between now and the next session is Thursday night when we talked about this a little bit, I drew three circles, and you'll notice that these three circles overlap somewhat. And I think it's important that, and that's why part of the A and B continuum, although, you know, I can place myself on it, why I said earlier, I don't find it particularly helpful, and yet I think that's by and large the frame of reference for the political debate in this country about what's happening with families. I think a better way to approach this is by looking at three circles. And one circle, and this would basically say that the well-being or the lack of absence of well-being of many children and families in our society is related to how these three particular things overlap, how they interact with each other. And one circle would be the family circle. What happens within our families? All of us, or most of us at least, who have children, we're part of one kind of family unit or another. We're going to talk about there's all kinds of different families, right? But we're all struggling, whatever the framework of our family is, we're struggling to do the best we can, right? And there are lots of things that either help us or get in the way, or that we're good at or bad at, or that we, you know, we don't know all the answers, but certainly what happens within a family is very, very important, right, with what happens to children and family. Second one that I put up here would be neighborhood. David Walsh uses these three categories. He's a child psychologist. He uses them a little different than I do. He's trying to assess the propensity towards violence. He said we can't predict whether a child is going to be violent or not, but a way that we can assess is that we can realize that they're better off or they're worse off depending upon what's happening within each of these three circles. And we'll talk about these in more depth next time. But so what? I'd ask you to think about the neighborhood you've chosen to live in and why, and other neighborhoods that you know about or where you do live or whatever. Neighborhood circle. And then the third one is the circle of the broader society. And within that, that includes a lot. That would include cultural images, television, movies, TV, music. It would include economic priorities, social cutbacks, education systems, all kinds of things. And I think the what's key here is that we see that it's the interlocking nature of these and how these three interact with each other.
The church.
Let's see. The church would probably be a feature of this and this, I think. Okay? Go ahead.
I think the church has to be in the family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's not there, then it's
all okay, well then we can put the church in all three. Yeah, I think it's fine to put the church in all
three. It's in that little dot at the center of the circle wall.
That's right!
There we go. Okay. Well, let's bring this to a close with just one more kind of framing comment from me, and that is that I was going to ask you, and maybe I'd ask you to think about this on your own, just to think about what's the first couple of words that come to mind when you think when you hear family values.
And right.
Yeah. See, you know, if I would have done that, I think a lot of us would have named well respect and other things like that, and some of us would have named, you know, right wing, mean politics. And just to tell you that my own struggle with these issues and my decision to write about them came out of, I was actually asked by a group to give a talk. I give talks on a variety of subjects around the country over the last 15 years or so. But I was asked specifically to look at what was happening in the country and the world through the lens of being a parent and through the lens of what was happening to children. I'd never been asked to do that before. And I did that. And I got the most positive feedback of any talk that I had given in 15 years. And what I picked up on in my conversations with people in the aftermath was that there really is a profound concern in this country about what's going on with families and children. But at least among the circle I was with that day, and I've sensed the broader circle, there was a lot of reluctance to just let the religious right frame the debate. And so I think what I'm trying to do is to take the issue of values very, very seriously, but to look at, have us look at that in a much more holistic way that really calls into question again our personal choices and values as well as our social priorities and the values reflected in those. So thank you a lot for coming, and hopefully we'll continue this throughout the week. Thanks a lot.